Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so the big news that surfaces yesterday afternoon, of course, right after we go off the air, so we don't even get an opportunity to talk about it yesterday, but we'll have all morning to get into this. The Raiders are moving on from offensive coordinator Bill Musgrave, who oversaw a unit that ranks sixth in the NFL in total offense this season. A 12-4 playoff-bound squad with the sixth-ranked offense is moving on from their offensive coordinator. Now, you don't necessarily want to use the word fired because Musgrave's contract was set to expire, and the team simply decided that they weren't going to do anything about it. They were going to let it expire, and they were going to move on. So quarterback coach Todd Downing is going to step into the offensive coordinator position. Downing, according to rumors, was getting some interest from two head coaching candidates that are out there right now to step up as their offensive coordinator. So for the Raiders, it was either make this move now or risk losing someone that they feel very highly of. Lo, the big question, Musgrave out, Ken Norton will stay. Did the Raiders get it right here in your opinion?
No, I think that the Raiders, you know, you knew that was with Musgrave, the writing was on the wall, Joe. You bring a guy in, and he's on the sideline, and he's comfortable being on the sideline. And then a couple weeks into the season, the head coach moves him up, don't want him on the sideline. You heard the different rumblings. And then, you know, even up to 2-3 weeks ago, talking about I wanted to run the ball more, and this is not the first time. And Jack, this is not the first time Jack's fired Musgrave, even though his contract was up. Jack, you got to realize, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack's pretty quick with that firing coaches. He's fired 27 most in NFL history.
Is that a true number?
That is a true number.
True friend, true number?
True friend.
If you throw stats out, I'm going to have to tell a story about when I played with the Titans.
This is true. I'm sorry.
Well, guys, you know, the Super Bowl was coming up, and we were going against the greatest show on turf, and I saw McNair naked in the shower, and boy, was he well endowed.
Boy.
See, that's a true story, too. I got stories about other people's times in the league.
That was impressive.
Very impressive.
With Ken Norton coming back, Dibs, you got to figure he's on the hot seat from week one. That was the 26th ranked defensive unit. Norton's going to get another shot. Fine. Raider Nation will embrace it, and they'll give him the most of the opportunity. They'll stand behind it because the whole goal here is to move this project forward. Back to the playoffs, possibly a divisional title, maybe make a run at the AFC Championship. But for Norton, what are the expectations going to be next season? You've got to assume this unit needs to take a huge step forward.
You'd have to be a team that's considered a top half defensive team, and certainly the secondary problems have to get fixed. And you can look at the improvement of individual players. Khalil Mack didn't have as good a year this year as he did last year. It's not to say he played badly, and the step back wasn't a big step back. Bruce Irvin probably wasn't as good as he was in Seattle. You start looking position by position, and you see if players improved, because that's part of the coaching formula that maybe we don't always talk about. Wins and losses and rankings are easy to look at, but did the player get better? And that's ultimately going to be on Ken Norton.
And then look at the secondary, Joe. You got to look at who went to the Pro Bowl in the secondary safety position. Who was a young? Who's also had, look at Carlos Joseph, how he played. Look who's doing that. You look at the secondary. Mark Robb was coaching the safeties and coaching that part. The Hall of Famer was coaching the DB. So when you look at kind of productivity, seeing who's putting together, that's why this was kind of odd to me to see you have a Pro Bowl and then you fire that coach. I tell you right now, looking at this team, just looking at it and watching the games, I think, and I love the guy, and I know that he can coach because he coached me and I know what he's about, is Jethro Franklin. The defensive line, the interior, I'm talking about the three technique and nine, you know, those guys in the trenches. I don't think they had a good year. Do you see anybody with more than three or four sacks? Go look at our interior line. And if Khalil Mack and if 51, if they didn't get it done or it wasn't by pressure, what did the guys do in the trenches? So this team definitely has a lot of concerns to me, looking at it as a guy just watching this team. They need a lot of help on that defense.
You're 100% right. The interior defensive line was not up to snuff.
No question.
That needs to get better. And if that gets better, the middle linebacker position can get better because those guys will play a lot more clean. You think Ray Lewis was all world solely because of Ray Lewis? Ray Lewis is a great player, but he had all those years of
Saragusa and then
Saragusa,
Nada. And then Nada Nodi.
Nodi Nada in front of him eating up those blockers.
Absolutely.
That kept him clean to pursue and make plays. I will say this about Mark Robb. He's a scapegoat. That's all. That's what that is. Understand that for what it is. Someone's head had the role, and if it's not going to be the guy at the top, it's going to be someone else. Look at Washington. Jay Gruden brought back but fired his entire defensive staff. Now, as the head guy, it's ultimately on you, but the organization's going to keep you around just like Todd Bowles with the Jets, but all the assistants have to go. Someone's head has the role. Doesn't mean it's justified, but to preserve Norton's position, someone on the defensive staff had to go. Unfortunately, it was Mark Robb, who, by all accounts, did a solid job. But someone's head was going
to
roll.
Now back to Warrior Wednesday. Here's Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
So let me take you through a timeline here. You're drafted in the first round. Your game gets progressively better. It gets to a point where some may say it's elite. You take your team on a playoff run that is so magical from a statistical standpoint on your behalf that you win a Super Bowl and you are rewarded with one of the richest contracts in NFL history. I'm talking, of course, about Joe Flacco. Since that time, it's been anything but magical for Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens. And yesterday, you had Raven owner Steve Bisciotti doing an end-of-the-season presser, much like Jed York does to not as much fanfare, but one of the direct quotes, "We need to get more out of Joe." Now, on the surface, relatively innocuous. You know, we need our quarterback to step up a little bit, but that shot's fired because you never hear, "We need to get more out of Drew. We need to get more out of Philip, Aaron, Tom, Peyton." Joe Flacco, top three quarterback salary, and that is taking up a big chunk of the salary cap in Baltimore. Here's what's happened since the Super Bowl run. 8-8, no playoffs. 10-6, you won a wild card game at Pittsburgh and then lost to the Patriots in the divisional round. 2015, 5-11, this season, 8-8. Flacco's numbers, I mean, since the Super Bowl alone, 19 touchdowns, 22 interceptions, 27 touchdowns, 12 picks, 14 touchdowns, 12 picks, shortened season due to injury, only 10 games. And then this year, 20 TDs, 15 interceptions. Low. The writing on the wall. Is Joe Flacco's leash getting short in Baltimore?
Oh, without a doubt. Joe Flacco's gone after next year if he doesn't, if they don't win, if they win eight games, if Joe Flacco only wins 8 or 9 games and they don't make the playoffs, Joe Flacco will be released in Baltimore. And they'll go in a new direction. You went out and you made defensive guys. You went out and got defense. You went out and got the pass rushers. All the things that they have there for in Baltimore. And Joey Flacco can't get it done right now. Joe, look at how many. He's an offensive coordinator killer. Go look how many offensive OCs that this guy's went through. And it's always been about these people protecting Flacco, saying, let's go get an OC. Let's go get another OC. Let's get an. And they protected him and given him ample opportunities. Comes a time when you have to say, okay, it's on me now. And I really believe that Joe Flacco's days in Baltimore is numbered.
Cam Cameron, Jim Caldwell, Mark Trestman, Gary Kubiak, just a few of the guys he's had over the last few years.
Right.
Last few years. I mean, it's almost like a one-and-done sort of thing, Dibs. This is a guy who was at the pinnacle. He gambled on himself and said, you know what? I'm going to pass on the contract offer. Then led the team to the Super Bowl. They had to step up and reward him. I'll never fault them for that because you had just won a Super Bowl. Talk to people in San Diego, Philadelphia, cities that have never won. Detroit, they'd gladly pay that. But now, that he's not returning on his end of the bargain, Dibs.
No, and it's across the board. And you read the comments from the owner. He was calling the general manager to task, the head coach, the offensive coordinator. Up and down the line, Steve Bisciotti is holding everyone's feet to the fire. And if you're Joe Flacco, ultimately, you're only going to be as good as your weapons as well. Didn't have a ton of great receiving options this year, and you're in a division where you've got to be able to run the football. And that offense, even though the team was better this year than last year, still not where it should be.
If you're Hugh Jackson, you need to be paying very close attention to this, and you need to be lying in the cut. Look at your division. Baltimore, Harbaugh's seat's heating up a bit.
Sure.
Flacco's been put on notice. Salary cap isn't a great situation. Ravens trending in the opposite direction of a Super Bowl berth. Pittsburgh, hey, they look good right now. Big Ben, he ain't getting any younger. At some point, there's going to be a quarterback issue in Pittsburgh. Cincinnati, as long as Marvin Lewis is there, they'll never win a playoff game.
True.
If you're Cleveland, you got to be thinking 3 years from now, we might have a real opportunity. Sounds insane based on the way the Browns have operated over the last decade plus, but an opportunity is going to present itself. Are they going to be smart enough to be in position to capitalize 3 years from now? Joe Flacco, not the only individual being put on notice yesterday. General manager of the New York Giants, Jerry Reese, came out and flat out told Odell Beckham, time to grow up. Time to grow up. The Miami boat thing was one thing. The lack of production in his first career playoff game was another. This whole plane getting trashed on the way back to New York. No one said it's his fault, but there were several Giants involved in that. So all of them have to share responsibility for doing something like that, completely unprofessional on the way back home. Here's Mike Francesa, the godfather of sports talk radio on WFAN in New York. This is how he opened his show yesterday.
And I don't care where he went during the week. I'm not going to revisit the boat because it's just part of the immaturity that has him out on the field with no shirt on before the game, like he's proven some point to somebody. Nobody cares if he wears sleeves, catch the ball. Nobody cares if he's out there with no shirt on, catch the ball. Nobody cares that you can make one-handed catches, try making two-handed catches. Catch the ball. Grow up. And maybe somewhere over there, owner, general manager, coach, well, maybe one day force this guy to grow up before they look back and say, you know what? You know, he never really was as good as we thought he was going to be. Wonder why. Because that's what you heard after Shockey left. And they never straightened that out. You know, he never was as good as we thought he was going to be. And to me, all the things, the celebrity, the one-hand catch, listen, he has been given stuff that you only used to get from winning. And that's the system upside down. Now you become a star by basically outrageous behavior and doing something outrageous, like making a one-hand catch when basically you drop, you know, every fourth ball. I'd rather a guy who doesn't make one-handed catches but doesn't ever have a problem making two-handed catches.
Lo, is this becoming a problem in New York? Because it's not just the media. The fan base looks at Beckham and they love the guy. He's exciting. The talent, the production, it's there. But mentally, how do you get this guy straightened out?
Joe, I think that he needs to go see a psychologist and really, really try to work on himself. I mean, a guy to just stand there and you see Eli in his ear, you okay, you okay? And he's crying. I mean, you watch the different stuff that goes on. And he goes, I just want to win. It's not a big deal. There's a big deal. There is something wrong. And I don't know if you say grow up. Because I think it's more than that. I think this kid is unstable. And people don't want to acknowledge that, oh, well, he's just being immature. No, he's bipolar. He's got some issues. And that's me just looking at him from outside looking in. You go over to the net, hit you in the head. You just do the things that he's doing, punching walls, doing the way that he acts out when he loses, all the things that he's doing. This guy, the stardom is there. The potential and the athlete and all the different stuff. He hustles, he tries. But you're bringing out a phone on warm up, and you're filming your body, and you're doing that, and put that on TV before a game. You're not into the game. I can't have a phone in my hand, chat, Snapchat, or whatever, or tweeting while I'm running on the field with my shirt off, and I have to make a conscious effort to do that. I'm not thinking about the opponent when I'm holding my phone, running on the field, warming up, and getting ready to send that out. There is a disconnect here, Joe. I don't care if he's a superstar, because he's a superstar that's hurting his team. I know guys on that team in that locker room probably seen him say, "Man, go punch your wall. Go, you know what? Punch the wall again. Run your head through it. We don't care." Guys are getting tired of that. As a player, you watch a guy and ethics goes on like that, you start to lose faith and lose confidence. No matter what the perception is, a superstar, that's not how guys in that locker room starts to feel.
Dibs, you think this problem gets worse in New York before it gets better?
Definitely, and I think you see the behavior of his teammates on the plane as an indication that Ben McAdoo is not firmly in control of the behavior of his team right now. And McAdoo is not even 40 years old. He's a young coach, and he's still trying to figure out how to be the CEO of an on-field product. It's not something that comes to you overnight, but he's got a legitimate problem on his hands with Odell Beckham Jr. You can't tell me that if Tom Coughlin was still running the Giants, that OBJ and his teammates would have gone to Miami and been on a boat shirtless. Now, I'm not putting all the blame on Ben McAdoo, but currently the culture in New York right now is not one of discipline and self-control based on the 24 hours around that playoff game.
You used some interesting words, and Lo, you touched on this as well. 1 minute celebrating, the next minute crying, putting a hole through the wall, kissing the kicking net, dancing in the end zone, trashing an airplane. He's living on both ends of the spectrum. We've seen this before. Terrell Owens, wildly productive on the field. So productive, in fact, the numbers justify first ballot Hall of Fame. But he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. Why? Because he couldn't control himself. Do you remember him crying about Tony Romo?
That's my quarterback.
Do you see that from Jerry Rice? Did you see that from Tim Brown? Did you see that from Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt? Did you see it from Marvin Harrison? No.
Brandon Marshall, you see it from?
Brandon Marshall, he's an individual, and he's come out and admitted he has a personality disorder.
Absolutely.
In fact, he's worked very hard to try to overcome so much of what hurt him early in his career. That could serve as the direction you want to head if you're Odell Beckham. Because right now you're 24 years old and you've had three highly productive years in the league. You can turn this thing around. You can get organized like Marshall or some of these other guys. But if you don't, you're going to be Owens. And maybe you put up enough production over the course of your career that you get a place in Canton or you're remembered as a great wide receiver. But what's your legacy? Because when people mention T.O., not everyone's first thought is, man, what a damn good receiver. Some people think about the Sharpie, the dancing, quarterback killer in Dallas, in Philly, in San Francisco. Jerry Rice played 16 years with the Niners. Tim Brown, 16 years with the Raiders. Larry Fitzgerald, who's third in career receptions, all 13 years with Arizona. Marvin Harrison, 13 years with Indianapolis. Chris Carter struggled early in Philadelphia, got his act together, played 13 years in Minnesota. Steve Smith, 13 years in Carolina. Isaac Bruce, 14 years with the Rams. Torrey Holt, 10 of 11 seasons with the Rams. You know two guys who had great careers but never really were able to put it all the way over the top? Randy Moss, 7 years in Minnesota before it became too much, two in Oakland before he burned out, not even a full three in New England before Belichick said, get the hell out of here, traded to Minnesota. The Vikings gave him 5 minutes, traded him to Tennessee, and then he ended up for a year with San Francisco. Randy Moss, the production was there. Couldn't keep it together. Terrell Owens, 8 seasons with the Niners. Then 2 with Philly, 3 with Dallas, 1 with Buffalo, 1 with Cincinnati. There's a pattern there. There's a pattern there. You can produce, and if you produce, there will always be a spot for you in the National Football League, in the NBA, in MLB, in the NHL. But are you going to win titles? And how are you going to be looked back upon? What's your legacy going to be? Beckham has a chance to change it, but he's on the T.O. path right now, I would say, and he'll be lucky to be T.O. Because to put those numbers up, he's going to need another 12 damn good seasons in the NFL just to get to that level. He's got Eli Manning, and he's in New York City, 24 years old, only 3 years in the league. There's time. But to me, that's the path I see him heading down.
I couldn't agree with you more, Joe. And that's where I talk about leadership. Leadership isn't given, it's earned. That's when a leader needs to put their arm around him and say, man, let's go sit down and go to lunch. And he's, oh, man, I don't even know you're going. And then it's intervention. It's where you're like, man, I'm just telling you, bro, you're heading down a wrong path. You're heading down a path to destruction. Well, what do you mean? Man, I'm doing this because I'm emotional. No, here you can be emotional, but when you're hurting our team and you're hurting yourself, you're hurting your image, you're hurting the perception. Now the GM's coming out. The owner's saying stuff. The coaches are saying stuff. Don't you look at it now. When you keep saying it's just the media and it's everybody else, when do you got to say, okay, I got to be the problem? That's where he's at. He's got to realize it can't just be everyone. The media's looking at me this way. It's not a big distraction. I could have went to Miami. All those things that you do when everyone else is saying stop, that's when people have to just stop and say, wow, it's me.
Now back to Warrior Wednesday. Here's Joe, Lo, and Dibs.
All right, here we go. We promised you news. We've got news. 6 NFL coaching vacancies at the head coach position entering the offseason. One has been filled. Jacksonville. Doug Marrone got promoted from interim head coach to head coach. Buffalo is said to be closing in on Sean McDermott, the Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator. That looks to be close to a done deal. And now we have word, Anna, that a third potential vacancy is about to be filled. What do you got?
All right. So Ian Rappaport is reporting this morning that Dolphins defensive coordinator Vance Joseph is back in the Broncos building. He hasn't left town and may not. Now, he interviewed yesterday with the Broncos. He was scheduled to fly out to San Diego today to meet with the Chargers, but it looks like he's going back in the building. So what does that mean?
All right, so Miami Dolphin defensive coordinator Vance Joseph, one interview, and before he can leave town, he's back in the facility for a second time, Loniel. Are we looking at the second time being time to put pen to paper?
Without a doubt you are. You look at Elway, Elway said, okay, where this guy is going, and that's why the first place he went is to Denver. This is his first pick, his first place that he wanted to go. Said he was going to fly on a plane to San Diego. Let me tell you something. Elway's a pretty smart guy. If he didn't think that this guy was qualified, he'd have said, okay, man, go to San Diego, go kick it around, see what you want to do, and we'll get back with you if you don't get nothing signed. He let him leave, thought about it, and said, that guy interviewed pretty well. I like his vision. Hey, come back over here. Let's try to find a number that's going to take to get you to stay here.
Does it surprise you at all that a very good defensive team that, while losing head coach Gary Kubiak, Wade Phillips was still, you know, there if you wanted to make something work? Does it surprise you that a team so good on defense, so suspect on offense, would go out and make their next head coach a defensive-minded individual rather than an offensive-minded individual?
Yeah, it does in a way because, you know, maybe this guy's going to pick up the phone and call Wade and say, come back. Because those defensive guys, you see, they play for him. They don't quit on Wade. Wade, so if I'm this young man, I pick up the phone, first call I have is to Wade Phillips because I'm already a defensive. I could add a little bit to it, that's fine. But now I look at offense, so he's got to have, trust me, you don't think Elway asked that question? Said, look, you're a defensive guy. Tell me how you're going to get this offense that can't score any points. We got receivers that didn't play for this young quarterback, didn't help him out at all. Guys, out of fact, just kind of quit on him. How are you going to get my offense back to where we can score at least 21 points a game? I don't need a lot from you. If we can score 21 a game, we win. This team would have won 11 games, Joe, if they scored just 21 points. That's how prolific that defense is. Not a lot of teams in the NFL, Dibs, can say that.
Dibs, Vance Joseph, if you're just joining us, looks to be in line to take the head coaching position of the Denver Broncos. Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator from the Miami Dolphins. What does this say about Kyle Shanahan? His father, Mike, was the head coach of the Denver Broncos when John Elway won two Super Bowls. John Elway now running the show in Denver. Kyle Shanahan considered by many to be one of the brightest coaching candidates out there. Not only that, he oversaw an Atlanta offense that finished number one in virtually every category and likely has an MVP quarterback in Matt Ryan once the voting's all settled in a few weeks here. What does that say about Kyle Shanahan that Elway would say, we're going in a different direction?
I think it says more about the Denver roster than it does about Kyle Shanahan. If you're Elway and you look at your team, you see obviously the strength is the defense, and you want to make sure that that stays intact. You have one of the three or four best defenses in the National Football League. So you bring in a defensive-minded head coach to make sure you keep that continuity. I don't think it's as much an indictment of Shanahan as it is of Wade Phillips and his ability to be promoted up to being the head coach. If you thought Wade Phillips was going to be the guy and you wanted a defensive-minded head coach, you would have promoted from within. But you want a defensive-minded coach and you don't think Wade Phillips is the guy, so you go out and you get a defensive-minded head coaching candidate and you bring him in.
So take me through this. If Jacksonville, and that's a done deal, Doug Marrone, if Buffalo closes on Sean McDermott and Denver closes on Vance Joseph, we've got three openings remaining. The Niners, the Chargers, and the Rams. Two of the hottest candidates are offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels from New England and offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan from Atlanta. It's starting to look as if the Niners wanting one of those two could become much more realistic than it was a year ago. What odds do you peg on either McDaniels or Shanahan being the next head coach of the San Francisco 49ers?
I would put money on it. I bet it's one of those two. It has to be because that's what you don't look at. They're still going through, and this is a, and you to our dismay, we always talk about, you know, what ownership is doing. Got to give them credit because they're getting a contingency plan in place. If Kyle Shanahan or one of these two don't decide, if they go to the other two missing links, what happens is now they can say, okay, we got our third, or we got our fourth. So they've done a great job of going out and seeing different GMs and different coaches' perspective. So now if they don't get Kyle Shanahan, you know what? At least they've already done their due diligence and have a good idea who they want. But one of these two guys, to me, Joe, it's unmutable. It's unchangeable. They're going to land in San Francisco.
As it pertains to the Oakland Raiders, you're going to be butting heads twice a year with the Denver Broncos, one of the better defenses in the game. Vance Joseph landing in Denver. If you're Raider Nation right now, what are you thinking? Are you thinking, man, Denver just got better? Or are you thinking, you know what? I'll take this. San Diego's in flux. Vance Joseph, it's not as if that Miami defense was that great based on most metrics you would look at. And then you got Andy in Kansas City. How do you feel if you're Raider Nation right
I'm
now?
Telling you right now, if I'm Raider Nation and if I'm Jack, I pick up the phone today and say, Reggie McKenzie, please let me just bring in Wade Phillip as a defense consultant. You bring him in, you take him off the street, coach. You take him or Pagano off the street, preferably Wade, because you want to make sure that contingency plan that you have a guy that he's the defensive kind of consultant, but you know who's running the defense. You got to do that.
Doesn't that upset egos and balance in that situation? You have too many cooks in the kitchen?
Who cares? You said, what would I do? Because we're about right. Winning, and you're saying, our window's closing. You already got a defensive-minded guy over there. If you wait too long, what if Wade goes to another team? What if you miss out on these guys? Now you're in this scramble again. Go get a guy that you know can – this guy could help Ken Norton. Wade is almost 70 years old, Joe. He's not trying to be a head coach. He's not a good head coach. We understand that. We've seen that. But he's a plethora of knowledge. Go get him. He's not intimidated of Ken Norton. Ken Norton's going to be asking Wade. You don't think defensive guys are going to be saying, Wade Phillips? He's a defensive genius.
It'll be interesting to see if Ken Norton, in fact, could allow Wade Phillips to come in and sublimate his ego and have a guy with more experience, more shingles on the wall, and be able to navigate that from an ego standpoint. I would see it from the outside as, if you're Ken Norton Jr. and you know it's a make-or-break year and you're bringing in a guy with this much experience and this much knowledge, I would feel like a lame duck coach if I were Ken Norton Jr. I wouldn't feel secure at all in that spot.
Rumors are floating that if Vance Joseph does in fact land as the next Denver Broncos head coach, and it looks like they're very close, he's heading back into the building for a second meeting, which generally indicates it's time to put pen to paper, that San Diego head coach, former head coach Mike McCoy, would be the offensive coordinator in Denver, that he would join Vance Joseph's staff. That is where he was Denver offensive coordinator, prior to taking the job in San Diego. What do you think of that move for Vance Joseph?
I think that's going to happen, Joe. See, I thought that when you look at Wisenhunt down there in San Diego, but you see McCoy, I thought McCoy maybe even come over here to Oakland because of the fact Jack knows him, he's familiar, he's good with offenses, he's good with quarterbacks. I thought yesterday that McCoy would be interviewing here, but going back to Denver for him, Elway knows him. He's a good guy. He's a quarterback whisperer. He's good with offense. That's a great move, and I think that's a good move for Denver.
Now back to Warrior Wednesday. Here's Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
Here's where we stand. Six, count them, six teams entered the offseason in need of a new head coach. Jacksonville has solved their issue. Doug Marrone, the interim head coach, promoted. He's now running the show. It looks as if Buffalo, according to reports all across the league, all across the land, that the Buffalo Bills have zeroed in on Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator Sean McDermott. Is that correct? Because I said Mike McDermott from Rounders, and I got Rounders now in my head in the last segment. Is it Sean McDermott as well? Whew, lucky. Probably lucky to the point where I shouldn't have taken the risk and just aired the fact that I wasn't confident.
You're okay. You're okay.
Story for another day.
It's all right. They beat you up a little bit, but you bounce back.
So should the Bills go with McDermott, you've got four vacancies remaining. The Niners, the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Rams. The Niners, by sheer will of making this thing take months, are going to let these other spots get filled and could stumble in the Kyle Shanahan or Josh McDaniels, widely regarded as two of the best candidates out there. Are we looking at a good situation for the Niners here, Dibs?
It depends on whether or not they could close one of those hot names, because if you are one of those two guys and you're looking at the four openings right now, and you start to rank them, you probably rank San Francisco either third or fourth, in my opinion. Denver's the closest to a plug-and-play solution, even though both those guys you mentioned are offensive coordinator guys, and Denver's offense is the one that needs the most work. San Diego's a better situation. You got Phillip Rivers, and hopefully you got a healthy offense returning. L.A., maybe the big question mark, but you have a deep-pocketed owner. And then San Francisco, from an offensive standpoint, you've got Carlos Hyde and basically nothing. So, yeah, it's good news because the Niners might be the last team with an opening. But unless they can get one of these guys, it becomes bad news.
Lo, according to reports, Vance Joseph, the defensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins, if he does not get the Denver job, he's going to interview with the 49ers. If you're the 49ers, should you even bother with this guy considering you're not his top choice? What I mean by that is you would assume that the people you're interviewing really want to work for you. Here's a guy saying, well, if I don't get this job, yeah, I'll show up and interview with you. Should you even bother?
Well, I think you bother because maybe Denver doesn't want him and then he goes to the Niners. Maybe the guy builds. Maybe he builds the Niner franchise, get it back to prominence. So I still think you kick the tires on other coaches. Some coaches, they have their first choice, second choice, and a lot of them don't get their first choice. So they sometimes have to settle with their second or maybe even third.
So which direction do you think we're headed here for the Niners? Because now you've got another report that Terry McDonough, I'm not really sure how to pronounce it. My apologies. He's the Cardinals VP of player personnel. He's going to interview for the GM job. Candidates continue to surface. Candidates continue to be interviewed, scheduled for interview. It looks like this thing's going to go at least another week. What do you think the team is zeroing in on? Josh McDaniels reportedly said that he really likes the situation with the 49ers. Is it possible that is the next 49er head coach?
It's very possible, and that for the Niners would be, I think, a step in the right direction. An offensive-minded guy who's had a lot of success in New England come here and start to rebuild this offense. But again, the question of who the GM is going to be and whether or not Josh McDaniels has a relationship with that person or can work with that person. It still seems odd to me, Lo, that they would think about bringing in a head coach before they bring in a general manager.
Yeah, it does. And you look at what he would bring. He's already been a pro coach, didn't fare well, so he's learned a lot. Still a pretty good coach. Knows how to recruit, knows different guys. And, you know, he could pick up the phone and bring in that Mike Vrabel. Vrabel will come coach for him. The Niners wanted Vrabel earlier, so now you have a guy if you bring in from that same type of tree. They played. Vrabel was a player while he was there in New England. So now you can get both those guys, one of them that you wanted already as your DC, bring him in, tough mentality, good coach. So I think Josh would fit here well, Joe.
Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Michael Silver scheduled to join us in about 9 minutes, just under an hour from now, 8:45. Green Day tickets to give away when the ticket window opens up. Josh McDaniels, certainly an intriguing candidate. If you were to focus solely on a candidate's background, defensive-minded, offensive-minded, which direction do you see as the best fit for this organization?
I think that offense, because you want to have that entertainment factor, because right now you want to get people, you want to be explosive, you want to be exciting, you want to get that fan base believing again that you can score points. This has been a stagnant offense for the last couple of years, even though you still want your defense. And I really believe if you bring in, you know, Josh McDaniel, who's offensive-minded guy from the Patriots, who you know he knows a little bit about offense, but you got to realize you got to trust that he's going to go out and get a Mike Vrabel, who is a defensive guy that everyone has sought after and thought about him as well. So if you get an offensive-minded coach that goes and puts an emphasis on the defense by getting it, bringing in a Vrabel, I think this team will be okay.
Dibs from the 650 on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line. Please explain. I don't think they were going for the
please
Roxy
explain.
Drop.
You never know.
Please explain why it's odd to get the coach first instead of the general manager. Something you post to Lo, something we've kicked around. Let's inform the listeners a little bit.
Well, the 49ers have a big dysfunction of recent vintage in not having the general manager and the coach on the same page. And ultimately, the GM in a successful structure is the guy who's going to identify the talent and bring him in and have the head coach coach him up and obviously play for the head coach. You want these two individuals to be on the same page. You want the GM to feel like the head coach is a guy that he either brought in or can work with. So if you hire a young head coach, Josh McDaniels, and maybe you just decide Tom Gamble is the guy and you slide him over, maybe Gamble and McDaniels don't have a good working relationship. Maybe they don't have the same ideology when it comes to football. That's the one thing that Jed York said that they wanted. They wanted to have open communication between the two. Normally, the coach would report to the GM, so it makes sense to me that you would hire the GM first, and then he would be a part of finding the coach.
You don't hire a vice president before you hire the president. So it's the same when the callers, when the text asking that, you have to realize when things are done in order, you have your owner, we get that. Then when you bring in the GM, what he's going to do is say, okay, I know I got to get my scouting department in line, and it's a funnel down. It's a trickle down effect. A head coach.
Trumped up trickle down economics.
Absolutely. Because a head coach, Joe, what he does, he gets guys ready to play. He puts in his, implements his offense, does his stuff, but he's kind of still looking for, he's still getting his orders from the top. So if you have a GM that said, okay, I'm building here, this is the kind of coach that I want because my scouting department is going to go after these type of individuals, that we're going to have my coach, because my coach is my chef. He's the guy that is the chef that's going to get the players, get the people out there to go ahead and put them in the right position. But the GM is the one who's giving him the ingredients to be successful when he's making that meal, Joe.
Speaking of ingredients, Michigan Wolverines all-world defensive weapon Jabril Peppers announced yesterday. He was a Heisman finalist, by the way. Very rare to have a defensive player as a Heisman finalist. He is going to be entering the draft. This is of no surprise to anybody. Peppers is one of the best players in the country. 6 foot, 210-pound junior, 68 tackles, 4 sacks, and an INT this year. But two things about him. One, big-time contributor on special teams. Very dangerous in the return game. Number two, and I want you to hear me out on this. Jabril Peppers played a grand total of 933 snaps this past season.
Wow.
That's not the wow. Here's the wow. 933 snaps at 15 different positions.
Oh, 933 at 15 positions?
933 snaps at 15 positions, ranging from quarterback to running back to wide receiver to kick returner to punt returner to free safety to strong safety to outside linebacker to inside linebacker to corner and beyond. 933 snaps, 15 different positions, one of the Heisman Five finalists in New York this past year. He will be a first-round draft pick. Currently rated by Todd McShay and the Scouts Inc. people at ESPN as the number 4 overall prospect in this year's draft. Yesterday, we talked about the idea of Deshaun Watson, number 2 to the 49ers. Clearly, until you figure out your GM coaching structure, you're not going to know which direction you want to go at number 2. Thankfully for us in talk radio, we can kick this around all day long. Jabril Peppers at number 2. Does it make any sense whatsoever for the San Francisco 49ers?
It makes sense. Everyone wants a quarterback, and I get that. But this makes crystal sense because now if you get a guy like that who's so versatile, who can run punt return, can play corner, can play, you know, play on the slot receiver, can play strong safety, weak safety, free safety, can play it all, play down in the linebacker position when you got 8-man box, you can't miss on a guy that is so versatile. That's good. It brings you depth. And you still can go get a free agent quarterback, a stopgap piece, and look for a quarterback next year and continue to build in the draft. Yes, Joe, he's a guy that, I would spend that second pick on because he gives you versatility.
Dibs, worthy of the second pick. Not to say the Niners go in that direction, but between now and late April, we're going to be kicking around quite a few suggestions for that number 2 pick. This is a big pick. This is part of what makes this job attractive, much like Jacksonville, that you have an opportunity to bring in a franchise player, a game changer, someone you can anchor around for the next, hopefully, 10-plus years. Jabril Peppers out of Michigan. Is that the direction the Niners could consider going?
Not at number 2. I think if you're sitting at 2 and you have every player on the board except whoever Cleveland decides to take, trade back. I think Jabril Peppers is more likely to be taken 8, 9, 10, further down the order. When you're looking at one of the highest picks in the draft, you got to look at the most coveted position. Is there a game changer at pass rusher? Is there an elite quarterback who's available? Those are the kind of players that you would use the number 2 pick on. Jabril Peppers is an incredible player, but what's his value over replacement pick as far as, you know, in that position. You might find a guy who is not as versatile as he, but can, you know, assimilate most of his abilities. You could get Peppers further down in the draft board. If you're sitting at number two and you're stuck on Peppers, trade down, get additional picks, and get him later in the draft.
You ain't going to get him. He won't. He's not going. He's going to be gone before five. Five is the last.
Really?
Yeah, because here's why. Here's the difference that I think, and when you look at a guy like that, I agree with you, a pass rusher, either offensive tackle, pass rusher, those guys are, you know, give me a blindside tackle guy, give me a pass rusher. But the reason why I throw his name in there is because you only have a staple. You're going to have a guy that you can line up at safety and be a dominant guy who can guard the tight end. You have a guy now that you can throw him in there when it's three receivers and four receivers. He can go in. You don't have to come off the field. You have a guy also now at punt return. You can have him on punt return,
true,
kickoff return, special teams. So at least you have a solid player that can give you so many range. He can do so many things for your ball club. That's why I like him if you're going to make a pick in that situation as well.
Now back to Warrior Wednesday. Here's Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
Sean Livingston with Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Good morning, Sean. How are you?
All right. I'm great. Thanks for having me, guys.
We appreciate you coming on. Let's start with last night's game against Miami. The rookie from UNLV, Patrick McCaw, gets his first career start. Nervous at all before the game? You go up and talk to him, try to tell him anything to calm him down?
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, you just wanted to play. It's a game of mistakes. You got to, you know, you can't be afraid to fail. And you just wanted to go out there and play. And playoff is, you know, he has great instincts, especially for a rookie. I mean, he knows the game, knows how to play. So it's just getting a feel for it, getting his feet wet, and going out there and play.
Is there any sense from you, Sean, that maybe you'd like to be in that starting unit, get a chance to get the starting minutes, or are you just as content staying in your usual bench role when something like this happens?
No, I'm good staying in the role. I mean, me and Steve, we talked about this before. Obviously, you had a long process career coming off the bench. And, you know, a lot of the coaches that he played for, like Phil, he said, Phil, even when the starter went down, he would never start and keep the bench rotation. Just because sometimes the rotations and the flow of the game, it's, you know, you want guys coming in with the same rhythm, you know, coming in at the same time that they always do. It just helps mentally. It helps them get into a rhythm. So he usually keeps the bench rotations the same. If a guy goes down, he usually keeps me and Andre on the bench.
Sean, you've been a veteran and a leader. How do you see things when, you know, I know teams talking about, hey, you guys got to move the ball in the fourth quarter, let lead slide up by 24. Do you grab guys, or would you talk to KD or Draymond? Or is that your role? Or do you, sometimes you're like, you know what, I'm going to let the coach handle that. Or sometimes you feel it's at the need of being a leader, you go in and say, look, how do we get better? How you know, diffuse a lot of situations? Or do you feel sometimes that's over your pay grade, or you let the head coach handle it?
You pick and choose your spots. You know, at the end of the day, it's up to the guys that are out there on the court,
sure,
right? I mean, you know, the coach, he gets paid to, you know, pull the strings and, you know, maybe call certain plays and manage a little bit. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's up to the players. The players have to get the job done. And so it's important for us to have input. Coach gives us that platform to be able to, you know, voice our opinions, you know, and kind of tell him and other guys kind of what we see out there as we're out there. And so it's up to us to really communicate with each other. You know, it's kind of a give and take relationship, you know, having this team together.
Sean, from the 415 on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line, is it me or would Livingston make an incredible coach? Obviously, there's so much left to be done with your playing career, but have you ever thought about that concept maybe down the road, getting into coaching?
Yeah, I thought about it. I mean, I don't know if it's for me or not. I think I thought about more so being in the front office, you know, maybe pulling the strings that way.
Wheeling and dealing.
Yeah. You know, I think I wouldn't be bad putting a team together. So I'm giving that a little bit more thought and see if I can, you know, see if I can play a good GM maybe one day.
Good for you.
So Bob Myers, Travis Schlenk, are they aware of this and are they hearing footsteps?
Yeah, I'm a protege in a sense, maybe, you know. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Sean, that'd be great for a great transition when it decides to happen. And when you think about yourself, you know, Sean, basketball is what you do. That's no, it doesn't defy you as a man. But how do you look at, you know, just the long term and just this process? When you have this stage, you see guys, you know, probably football, Odell Beckham, sometimes they act up and don't understand, you know, that, hey, look, it's what you do, but you have a stage to do other things. Well, who is Sean Livingston? What is your stage and what is kind of your purpose that drives you?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, just starting out, again, basketball has been something I've done my whole life. But, you know, just having a great background, being raised by, you know, my dad, my grandfather, great, you know, parents to me, you know, just showing me that there is more to life. There is more to life than basketball, having a perspective about that. And I think that allows me to keep, you know, my perspective, you know, through adversity, through injuries, through pressure situations, because it hits us all. But understanding there's more to life, you know, you can only do this for so long. And, you know, it's really about how you treat people and, you know, what you give back, you know, because the relationships and stuff like that lasts a lot longer than this game is going to last for us. So just trying to plant seeds and, you know, just do it the right way while I can.
Sean Livingston with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Obviously, as fans, as radio guys, we're as fired up as can be for next week's stretch of games. Take us into the life of a player when Monday you're going to play the Cleveland Cavaliers. 2 days later, you're going to play Russ and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then a couple days after that, you're going to take on James Harden and the Rockets. What's a week like that like for a player?
Yeah, it's an exciting week. Even, you know, probably more exciting, you know, for fans out there. I don't want to be too cliche or coachish or GM-ish or whatever, but we still got a game Thursday. So
that's true. Detroit's, you know, still on the schedule. Sorry about that.
You got to lock that in. But it's good for us. Honestly, you know, it really is, because it gives us a chance to really, you know, test kind of where we're at amongst the NBA elite, you know, and then also stay consistent with that. I mean, this is what happens in the playoffs, right? You have some of the best teams that come together and play, and all of this hype and expectation and excitement and production that goes along with it. And then it's, you know, how can you focus on, you know, your task at hand? So it should be fun, though. It should be good. I mean, you talk about MVP players and, you know, the Cavs, obviously the Christmas game was kind of an epic game. So it should be fun.
Sean, we're auctioning off a Warriors package for the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame that includes tickets to the game against Houston February 9th, and then two guests get to fly on the Warriors charter to Phoenix for the Suns game the next day. What would these winners look for on the charter? Is it board games? Is it a rock, paper, scissors tournament? Are there cards? What sort of activity might they see on the charter? Things that you could talk about.
Yeah, you know what? I can't be the one to talk about. I gotta let them see for themselves. You know, it's not a good tease,
Sean.
It's not a surprise if I'm you know, giving up. You know, letting them get the cookies. They gotta go ahead and be on the plane.
But that is an extremely, extremely presidential answer, right?
That was incredible,
General Manager. You might as well just own a team while you're at it. With answers like that.
That's right. But what you're saying is it definitely would be something worth being around.
It's worth the experience. You got to get it live and in person.
Beautiful stuff. Sean Livingston with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Sean, thank you so much for your time. Good luck with that stretch of games. We look forward to catching up with you next week.
Yes, sir. Thanks. Take care.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.